Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Which means peace be unto you. We say to you all in both their names of love, Assalamu alaikum. For those of you who may wish to participate in our discussion today, you're welcome to call in at, 347-989-0855. That's 347-989-0855. Or you can hit us up with a message at Hiram1555@yahoo.com. That's Hiram1555@yahoo.com. As always, we'd like to thank you for giving us another hour of your day and another day of your time. We'd like to thank the thousands of you who listen live from around the globe and the thousands of you who will download us later from all of our affiliate sites, be it Hiram1555.tumblr.com, Twitter.com/Hiram1555, Facebook.com/Hiram1555, BlogTalkRadio.com/Hiram1555, and our main news blog, which is formerly TrumpetOfTruth.wordpress.com, and also SalamJournal.com and SalamJournal.org, which is now the Hiram1555 blog at Hiram1555.com. Again, my beloved family, let me say it to you all. Assalamu alaikum, and welcome to another edition of the most powerful platform, bar none, for truth, on the face of God's green earth. This is your platform for black education, liberation, and empowerment. This is the Star and Crescent Report, and our show today is titled, Global War on the Horizon, the U.S. Empire Strikes Out. Now, before we go into the show, some of you who are listening may be saying, man, his voice is like crashing, and he seems like he's struggling to get words out. I am, brothers and sisters. I've been doing that for the last few weeks, right? And come to find out that not only when I was at the hospital, they told me that I had acute bronchitis, but they told me also that I had tested positive for COVID-19. And so I'm trying to recuperate from all of that. That's why I could not get my voice back. But anyway, you'll hear me stop. Drink water, stop, drink Gatorade, the zero Gatorade, because I have to have this, you know, to rehydrate myself. So, brothers and sisters, don't think harsh of the brother. Just pay attention to the message, okay? And also, I want to say this to you all. For those of you who are listening to the Star and Crescent Report, we have a new platform. You can go over to the Red Pill Diaries and sign up. Now, it's multiple Red Pill. Some of them popped up before, some of them popped up after we started the show, but I had the idea long before they came up. But you go to YouTube, subscribe to the Red Pill Diaries, but the one with the Morpheus from The Matrix, not the other ones, the one with Morpheus with his hands out with the red and the blue pill in his hand, that's us. Also, you can go over to Patreon and support our new broadcast, and we do a video videos now starting once or twice and sometimes three times a week, video conferences. I got my co-host, Brother Rashid. I'm going to try to, quote-unquote, sucker my other brother Jerry over there to do a couple shows too, and the other brothers, okay? And we're going to get some interviews, and we're going to do a lot of stuff. Go over there, and it is patreon.com/TheRedPillDiaries, okay? You go over there and subscribe today. I want to see at least 5 or 6 subscriptions today, okay? New subscriptions today, all right? And also, I want to see that over on YouTube also. Support the hustle, support the grind, support what we're doing to try to get the truth out, because we really don't charge anything for you, because you go to the Hiram 1555 blog and read all the news and analysis for free, unless you sign up for the premium where you get more. But anyway, the show is titled Global War on the Horizon, the U.S. Empire Strikes Out. Now, I'm going to cover a few things that Brother Rashid and I talked about over on Patreon a few nights ago. The videos are up, by the way, brothers and sisters who are subscribed to the Patreon. The interview or the talk is up. So you can go read go look at part 1, part 2, part 3, and part 4. We cut them into 4 parts to make it easier because it was almost a 2-hour show, okay? And at first we was experiencing technical difficulties. But I want to backtrack. When I'm telling you that global war is on the horizon, if you look around at everything that is in the news, it is pointing towards war. As we were talking about on Patreon, the most ignorant people are the most least knowledgeable people about this is Black America. It seems like the worse the situation gets, the more they trample off into sport and play. And this is very detrimental to the to Black livelihood and Black security, right? You can talk about all the stats in the NBA. You can talk about every player, all their stats, what they had for breakfast, what they had for dinner, who they're married to, what their contract is. You can talk about all of that. But yet you don't find the time to understand that right now there is a global war underway on all levels. But it will manifest itself in head-on collisions on the military battlefield. We're seeing the head-on collisions during trade. We see the head-on collisions in economics. You see, what I'm trying to get you to understand is that some of you are stuck in foolishness, and some of you are stuck in prophecy, because you don't understand that we are now at the culmination. Prophecy don't go on forever. I just want you to understand this. Some of you are still looking to 63 and 68 and 74. Some of you are still looking to that. But we're in a process now where all of this stuff is coming to a head. Those things that the prophets predicted, those things that the last and the greatest messengers of God, the messenger of God, stated, we're at a culmination point. And at this point, we will see rivals, military rivals, economic rivals, political rivals bump heads, and we'll see chaos ensue across the globe. I want to ask you honestly, what do you see when you look out into the United States political landscape? You see division, you see hatred, you see a growing divide, whether it be class or color, right, or wealth divide. You see growing dissatisfaction, not only with each other, but with the governments and vice versa. And you see growing dissatisfaction with the economic situation and the plight that is now facing America. And then when you look past America's borders, what do you see? You see nation after nation rising up against American arrogance, American hubris, right? American exceptionalism. Are we not seeing this? And it's leading to a conflict. Because America says to the world, there can be one ruler, not God, but me. There can be one dictator of policy globally. That's me. There can only be one nation that can dictate law. But when you talk about law, I can escape the ramifications of law. That's America. That's what she calls exceptionalism. Do as I say, not as I do. And this is causing the great bubbling up of tensions around the globe. You understand? There's a great bubbling up of tensions. As I said, if you're just joining the show, if you hear me laboring, look past that and listen, okay? I want to share something with you. While we're talking on this, the great bubbling of tensions, right? And while we're talking about what we see happening with America, let's just look at this, okay? I'm going to read something to you, the headline, okay? And for the brothers who are listening who want to have something to say, brothers, you can call in and you can raise your hand and we can discuss this, especially at the early stages of the show, because I want to play some clips and stuff, and I want to connect the dots. You know how we do it. As the messenger said, we sweep up as we go. We don't leave a dirty house. We sweep up so that nobody has to come behind us to sweep up. We do an excellent job. So, according to this latest article, and this is by Dennis Etler, right? And for those of you who don't know who Dennis Etler is, you can look him up, okay? All right? He is an American political analyst who has a decade-long interest in international affairs. He's a former professor of anthropology at Cabrillo College in Aptos, California. He has a PhD in anthropology from the University of California in Berkeley, all right? And he is an analyst on multiple platforms internationally, okay? And his article, he has a video where he was interviewed, but some of it is transcribed in an article. And the head of the article reads like this: U.S. threat of snapback against Iran is cynical, ploy of a rogue nation. Wow, do you understand what just, it's a ploy of a rogue nation. Now, 20 years ago, no nation would dare even utter the words rogue nation when referring to America. What I'm trying to do is show you something. Show you how time is coming into fulfillment. Show you how America is collapsing. Show you how we are living in the fulfillment of prophecy. This is the culmination point, okay? All right? So, Mr. Adler, an American, I might add, talked about America being a rogue nation. All right? Now, what's very important about this, the definition from vocabulary.com of the word or the statement or the phrase rogue nation. That's R-O-G-U-E-N-A-T-I-O-N, rogue nation, okay? It says, a state that does not respect other states in its international actions. Now, let's see if that's befitting before we go into the article, okay? Let's see if that's a befitting title for America. She went into Libya, right? Under the auspices of her, or under the cover of her talking about protecting the protesters, right? And law and civility. And the protesters should have voices. Protesters whom she armed, whom she trained, and whom she gave backing to, right? What is she doing at home with the protesters here? She's beating the hell out of them, deploying troops everywhere, locking them up, is that not right? Demonizing them by her scribes in the papers and in the news, right? The hypocrisy, you see? Do you see? She goes in and bombs a nation like Libya. She goes in and sodomizes. I brought this up on the show. A lot of you, when we look at what happened in Libya, because the news gloss over this, because they don't want you to see their true workings. They don't describe this to you. They didn't just kill Brother Muammar Gaddafi. They wanted to send a message. They went after his kids. They wanted to send a message to everybody who would buck up against the empire. They tortured him. They sodomized him for over an hour with broomsticks and the butt of guns. Listen to me good. A dignitary, a world leader. They sodomized him. Meaning they raped him, tortured him, then they killed him. You don't get this on the regular news. You understand me? What do they do with Syria? And I told you everything that was going to happen in Syria before it happened. I told you everything that was going to happen in Libya before it happened. Why? How did I know this? Because the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said this. These are the lessons that I remember sitting down with Saladin day after day after day, and he would tell me certain things. And I said, brother, well, I never heard nobody say this stuff before. Nobody ever talked about this. Why did the messenger say this? And how can I prove this? And this, and he would often just, as a little teenager, he would sit me down and say, brother, I'm not concerned with what everybody else believes. I know what the messenger said. He said, I don't care what nobody else said. If the messenger said it, that's it, brother. It's done. It's a done deal. You know, with him, it was black and white. If the messenger said it, that's it. If you said it, then we got to be skeptical about it. And I understand, because not everything that the messenger has said, we see it in the news. We see it happening. And as I was telling Rashid the other night, I said, it's amazing. I remember my mom and my family used to mock me when I accepted my own, when I came into Islam. Because I came in at a young age. I came in at 15, I believe. And they would mock me. They would laugh. And now my mom, you can't get my mom to stop talking about how great the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is. You can't get my mom to stop talking about how wonderful Master Farad Muhammad is and how he had to be God and how the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has to be the messenger of God. See, time brings about things. If your heart is right, time brings about a new perspective of things. Things that I was getting chastised for on this show. Remember when I started this show and brothers and so-called ministers and stuff was telling you all that what I was saying wasn't what the messenger taught, even though I was going right into the books, pulling it out, stuff that they had never seen or said before. And now the talk of the day around the internet is the same platform that I laid out about the geopolitics and the economics of the fall of America. You can't get around it now. But 11 years ago, this was not the discourse. Right? Someone had to blaze away. So when we look at this situation with America and how our own scholars now, and remember this guy's a scientist in human nature, human behavior, right? He studies the actions of the human over the years, right? He calls America a rogue nation. Rashid Muhammad ain't saying it on his own. Rashid Muhammad is quoting a white scholar, right? And the definition gives the description is this: a state that does not respect other states in its international actions. Well, let's see. We got to go back into this. I haven't forgotten this. The title of the article is called "U.S. Threat of Snapback Against Iran is Cynical Ploy of a Rogue Nation." Now, in this, it describes Mr. Atlas saying this. Now, mind you, I didn't read this article. And a lot of stuff that I read with you all, I read right on the air. And sometimes I gloss over some of the stuff before. But listen to what he says. And this is concerning the JCPOA. That is that nuclear agreement between Russia, right, and some of the European countries, which I think is China, Russia, Britain, France, and Germany, Iran, and America. Those are the signatures to the JCPOA. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because it's very important that you get the gist of this, okay? It's very important because what this guy's talking about, we had already talked about, okay? We had already talked about on the show. We had already played the clips of the ramifications of America's imperial hubris and arrogance. But we're gonna read a little bit of this because I like to be very, very thorough in what I'm saying. Mr. Etler says this: in the fashion of a gluttonous monster, this is what he calls America, in the fashion of a gluttonous monster, when it comes to the Iranian nuclear deal, the U.S. thinks it can have its cake and eat it too. In 2015, the U.S. was instrumental in securing the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action to limit Iran's nuclear program, along with China, Russia, the U.K., France, and Germany. But the current U.S. president made it a plank of his presidency to renounce the agreement and withdraw from it. So stop right there. America initiated the agreement to try to stop Iran from her right to enrich uranium because of Israel, right? And because of her designs on the Middle East. I'm talking about, when I say her, I'm talking about both of them, because they're one and the same. America and Israel are one and the same. So I'm referring to them in singular terms, not plural. So because of her desire to wage war on Iran, because it's coming, it's going to come, and because of her desire to balkanize the Middle East so that she can make greater Israel, because remember that I told you on another show, Israel, that entity that was forced upon Palestine, stands at the core of Christianity and Judaism. If they lose that state that they put on the back of Palestine, then all goes out the window for Judaism and Christianity. So these fanatics, I would say, in office, and these fanatics in the halls of power are doing everything that they can to overstep prophecy and try to prevent the fall of not only their world, but of their religion, their economic system, and their global order. All of this is at stake. This is not no one-shot deal for one thing. This is one-shot deal for everything. So you got to understand this. All right? Bear with your brother. I haven't heard from you. I haven't talked to you in a while unless you were on the other platform over at Patreon.com/RedPillDiaries Go over there, subscribe. Again, I got to say, me and Brother Rashid, we did a show together, and I want you to go check it out, okay? Now, he goes further and says, the United States announced its withdrawal from the JCPOA on May 8th, 2018. That's 2 years ago, right? 2 years ago, plus some months. The United States, remember when Trump was huffing and puffing, this is not a good deal. We got to pull out of this. Remember all that? The United States pulled out of that agreement 2 years ago. I have not forgot what I was talking about. Rogue nation status. This is very important to what Mr. Adler called America. So pay close attention, okay? And y'all know how I do it. I have to go through so much to get to these points, all right? Because I like to read things in their context so that you can get it fully and not try to give you a curveball here and there. No, I want you to know it just like it is. So it says, in a joint statement responding to the U.S. withdrawal, the leaders of France, Germany, and the U.K. stated that the United Nations Security Council resolution endorsing the nuclear deal remained the binding international legal framework for the resolution of the dispute. Russia and China have also denounced the U.S. withdrawal and rallied in support of the Iranian position. Now, sorry about that, brothers and sisters. I knocked something over. I was reaching for something. I want to go to a dictionary real quick. Now, here we are. Because it's very important that we understand words, okay? It's very important. The word binding, when used in that context, is considered an adjective. And it means of an agreement or promise involving an obligation that cannot be broken. Let's go back and read that part again. All right. The United States announced its withdrawal from the JCPOA on May 8, 2018. In a joint statement responding to the U.S. withdrawal, the leaders of France, Germany, and the U.K. stated that the United Nations Security Council resolution endorsing the nuclear deal remained the binding, what is binding? Huh? Of an agreement or promise involving an obligation that cannot be broken. So America broke a promise or an agreement she signed, right? She faltered on her obligation, right? In a contractual agreement that was supposed to not able to be broken by any of the signatures of the deal. So if one of the signatures of the deal left the deal, they no longer had any say-so about the deal. This is what I'm getting at, okay? This goes to the heart of the definition, rogue nation, a state that does not respect other states in its international actions. You understand? I'm glad you're listening good. So, with that being said, Mr. Adler is talking about this. And he says, as a result of the U.S. withdrawal, it reimposed, listen to this, unilateral economic sanctions against Iran and has continually threatened to escalate punitive measures against the Islamic Republic in a campaign of maximum pressure to force it to renegotiate the agreement with terms dictated by the U.S. That's not a renegotiation. They are trying to make Iran surrender. If you are pulling out of the deal that you came up with and that you said was fully binding on all participants of the deal, and because it did not work out in the way you wanted to, you're strong-arming the participants of that deal, even though you pulled out. That is not a negotiation. That is a move to force a total surrender to your way of dealing with the things. Is that not right? What is that called in international terms? According to the definition, rogue nation. I'm going to say that again. A state that does not respect other states in its international actions. Why are you talking about this, Rashid? Why are you talking about this? I thought the show was called Global War on the Horizon. Well, this is a part of the global war. I thought you said that it was called Global War on the Horizon, the U.S. Empire Strikes Out. Well, they're striking out because they're alienating not only their enemies, but they're alienating their so-called allies. Now, why did I read some of that stuff? It's because I want you to listen to something. This is not I have it downloaded, I believe. Okay. Yeah, I do have it downloaded. We played this a year or two ago on the show. Okay. And it was Secretary of State at the time, John Kerry. And he gives you the outline of the JCPOA, right? And he talked about how America was begging and pleading and how she was trying to get other nations on board even though they didn't want to go. And finally, when the nations got on board, that if America would pull out of this, this would be the recipe for the end of the dollar as the global reserve currency. John Kerry said it. So when you see this going on, America's fighting tooth and nail for the life's blood of the empire. And the life's blood of the empire is the U.S. dollar. Because without the U.S. dollar as the reserve currency, the great and powerful military-industrial complex, the war machine of the empire, comes to a screeching halt. And then all of the troubles that have been kept at bay within her domestic and international policies, right, will boil over. And she'll have to deal with them instead of kicking them down the road. I'm glad you're listening. Listen to what John Kerry says about America doing exactly what she's doing right now. Listen to the ramifications. He's at a forum talking. He's been asked the questions, and he's answering the questions. Right? And he's telling you the ramifications of America's rogueness if she does do what Mr. Donald Trump has chose to do this day. All right?
They mastered the fuel cycle. When people say, oh my gosh, I'm worried about what happens in year 15 or 20, they may become a nuclear threshold nation. Folks, they are a nuclear threshold nation today. They became that. And they became that while we had a policy of no enrichment. A country that's mastered the fuel cycle.
People say, oh, we've got the 5+1 together again and negotiate a better deal. You're beginning to deal with that. Will you deal with the problem of getting that 5+1 again to get on the same position you're in now?
One of the reasons, Sir Harry, that we felt it was important to move forward with this negotiation is the fact that the sanctions was already framed. Remember, folks, we don't trade with Iran. We have a primary embargo. And by the way, the primary embargo will stay. But if everybody thinks, oh no, we're just tough, the United States of America, we have our secondary sanctions, we can force people to do what we want. I actually heard that argument on television this morning. I've heard it from a number of the organizations that are working that are opposed to this agreement. They're spreading the word, America is strong enough, our banks are tough enough, we can just bring the hammer down and force our friends to do what we want them to. Well, look, a lot of business people in this room. Are you kidding me? The United States is going to start sanctioning our allies and their banks and their businesses because we walked away from a deal and we're going to force them to do what we want them to do even though they agreed to the deal we came to? Are you kidding? That is a recipe, quickly, my friends, for them to walk away from Ukraine, where they are already very dicey and ready to say, well, we've done our bit. They were ready, in many cases, to say, well, we're the ones paying the price for your sanctions. It was Obama who went out and actually put together a sanctions regime that had an impact. I went to China. We persuaded China, don't buy more oil. We persuaded India and other countries to step back. Can you imagine trying to sanction them after persuading them to put in place sanctions to bring Iran to the negotiating table? And when they have not only come to the table, but they made a deal, we turn around and nix the deal and then tell them you're going to have to obey our rules on the sanctions anyway. That is a recipe very quickly, my friends, business people here, for the American dollar to cease to be the reserve currency of the world, which is already bubbling out there. And if the United States were to behave that way, not only would we have lost them with respect to the sanctions, but we will lose their support if we have to use military action. Can you imagine Israel and the United States taking military action because we forced a situation where Iran goes back to what it was doing, because we wouldn't live by the deal that we already agreed to, which the United Nations has already approved 15-0 in the Security Council. One thing you can't bomb away here, folks, is knowledge. The missile sanctions for 8 years, the arms sanctions for 5 years. The issue here is, can you build the kind of international support structure that we built to make it really meaningful? We had our sanctions in place for quite a few years. It didn't get the job done. It wasn't until we got everybody else at the table, and more importantly, till we got a lot of countries that do trade with Iran to stop the trading, that had the impact.
So, what are we seeing Trump do now? He pulls out of the deal, right? He unilaterally imposes sanctions on Iran. Is that not right? He is trying to force Iran into another deal, the same thing that Kerry warned them about in the ramifications of. We see Trump doing what else? Threatening military action. Is that not right? He and Israel, just like John Kerry, lay out. Is that not right? And then trying to sanction not only Russia and China, but European nations that want to keep the deal going. And on top of that, America pulls out of the deal and then says that she is still a signature of the deal. I'm not making this stuff up. In the newspapers lately, you've been hearing the word snapback, because Trump and his teams are talking about that they went to the UN knowing that they were going to lose the vote to reimpose unilateral sanctions on Iran, even though Iran is in compliance according to all international organizations, to the letter and spirit of the JCPOA. Even though Iran is still in full compliance with them, even after America pulled out and even after Europe reneged on a lot of their part of the deal, America wants to do a snapback because she lost the vote at the UN, which means that she thinks that she is still a party to the deal. Now listen, you know what she, it's like, I'm married, right? But I'm going to pull out of my marriage, and I don't want any of the responsibilities of being married, but I want my wife to stay at home, don't see anybody else, don't do nothing, sit right there, do exactly as I say. While I'm out partying and living it up with other women and spending money and making money and just having a good time. The madness of these people. That's what America is trying to do. This is the hypocrisy of a nation on display universally. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said that Allah would expose America universally to her enemies and her allies. And the whole world would see who was the greatest obstacle to peace. These are the words of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And after she would be exposed, this beast would go to war. And then she would be beaten down through multiple wars, grinding down the American military juggernaut while her coffers, her economic coffers, lay empty. And then she would be pushed back to her own borders, isolated, defeated, and fatigued as a has-been former hegemon. Right? What are we looking at internationally today? This is what I'm asking you. Did Elijah Muhammad lie? This is what I'm asking you. Show me where he lied. Because we're looking at his words in real time, as the intelligence community of America loves to say. We're looking at actionable intelligence. Intelligence or information that you can act upon and rely on immediately. You understand? All praise is due to Allah. It is a very beautiful time to be a follower of the most honorable Elijah Muhammad. I bear witness to this, and I bear witness to this with all my heart, all my soul, every bit of oxygen in my body, to the core of my essence, I bear witness to this. Now, you know I have to love these teachings. You know I have to love what I'm to stand up for all these years, day in and day out, putting my money up into this. Talking to you freely, constantly. I was looking, and I'm going to bring this up, Brother Rashid, I'm bringing you in a minute. I was just looking. We lost on the Hiram's 1555 blog, Facebook cut the links to the articles. Our own web server cut almost all the links to our articles. I'm talking about close to 100,000 articles or more. So people can't just come to the website. You got to go straight to Hiram1555.com. Taking our traffic down from 39 to 4,900 people a day to between 70 and 150 a day. And on top of that, the Hiram1555 blog was taken offline for over a week because Citibank, you know, Citigroup, and I showed it to Brother Gerald, and I believe Brother McCall, if I'm not mistaken, and Brother Rashid, and I think Brother Omar, if I'm not mistaken, showed them parts of the injunction against the website. Little old me, little old Hiram 1555, they put an injunction against my site for talking about their economic malfeasance and ineptitude. Yes, this is true. I'm going to bring Brother Rashid in, and if I'm lying here, he'll tell you. But I know he has something to say on what's going on and what we just talked about, so I'm going to bring the brother in. Hopefully, Lord, I'm going to let you go through. I'll say to you, brother. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum salam. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir, brother. We hear you loud and clear. Before you go further, brother, am I lying about anything?
No, sir. No, sir. Well, brother, this is we're the truth teller.
Go ahead.
Like the message is saying, if you catch me telling one lie, then all of the teachings are no good. You see? That's the difference between us and the people of this world. They're liars. Right?
That's right.
They said themselves, Donald Trump has told over 25,000 lies since he's been in office. 25,000 lies. So why get upset when the president said so-and-so and he lied? He's a natural liar. He can't help himself. Right?
That's right.
Back to what you were saying about the John Kerry. Do you see the difference between the Obama administration and the Trump administration? The Trump administration, Donald Trump is a gangster. That's what he was taught by gangsters. John Kerry and him actually concerned about their country. Donald Trump concerned about Donald Trump and how much he can fleece. He's a con man, a grifter. That's all it is, brother. His sole thing is how much he can steal from him.
Yeah.
And this is what his people, this is what they're doing. They are thieves. And they, like the scripture says about this little Pharaoh at the end of time, I keep telling you, what? Everything he did turned the crap, right? Everything,
yep.
Isn't everything Donald Trump doing turning the crap? Well, why would he do that? It don't work out. Why are you turning around?
Yes,
I want to do that. It don't work out. I want to do this over. It don't work. Nothing is working out for him. Everything is turning against him in the day of Allah, in the 60 to not exceed 70 years of extension. We're in the 65th year, five more years to go. And on the 65th year, everything is turning up on the devil, right?
Mm-hmm.
You got the pandemic, right? As they call the pandemic, the horsemen of apocalypse, what is it called? It's called the pestilence, right? Isn't that what pestilence is? It's shutting down the white world. Not only in America, all over the place. The devil, 40 or 50 million people out of work, and the rich guy go home and say, "Hell, I'm working, I'm fine." And the rest of the people, he's going to throw them out on the street.
Mm-hmm.
That is Allah, brother. That is Allah doing his work. He is proven to you that he is the best knower. I remember a brother told me, another Muslim told me, he said, "Brother, after all is said and done, Allah fulfilled his promise." He fulfilled his promise to come after us after thousands of years did his work. He's here, and he's doing his work on us. We should be joyful, brother.
Wa alaykum salam. Good teaching. Good talk. This is what I'm saying to you all. America is a pariah state. She's a rogue nation. And sometimes I know you hear me when I talk about how she is a vampire or a succubus state, or how she is a she stretches her tentacles around and tries to suck the life's blood from the other nations. This is what she's doing now. Now, being rogue, she does not bother herself with the ramifications of law. She trumpets law. She trumpets democracy, right? But anytime somebody gets in office in another country that she doesn't like, she sanctions them, right? She starts a destabilization programs. She tries to overthrow them, military coups. That's not somebody who is always trumpeting democracy as the greatest instrument, right? If you believed in it, you would let it go forth. See, she's striking out at every turn. This is what I'm trying to get to you. And this hasn't raised her. I was reading an article, and I was also talking to a source of mine. And what their perspective of the situation was close to what the article from Asia was. I was just, let me talk to you for a minute, okay? And they were talking about how Donald Trump is angry and how American politics is going down the tube, and how they're angry because they cannot force their way or their politics on other people anymore. For the last century, they've been able to do so by threat, by economic coercion, or through the barrel of a gun. And today, she cannot accept nations who stand on par or equal footing with her, or those who don't stand on par or equal footing to her, refusing to bow or cower to her demands. This has drawn them to be very mad, and they spit out all of this vitriol against everybody. It's everybody's fault. It's China. China is the cause of the virus. China is the cause of this. China took our jobs. Russia did this. Russia did this. Venezuela did this. It's never the U.S. empire. It's never. That's the sign of a bully. The bully or the thief, the rapist or the robber, they can always tell you what somebody else did. I know some of you got these people in your family. We all do. Or somebody that you know. They're slick talkers, fast talkers, right? And they're always the victim of something. If they get fired from the job, oh, them such and such did me like this. You see them on another job, I like this job. It's going to pay me such and such. 3 weeks later, you know, I wanted to do this, but they wouldn't let me do that. You know, it's because of my color. It's because of this. Constantly, it's always somebody else. Never them. This is America. This is her politics. This is the way she handles things, like a big, spoiled baby. Right? So what Donald Trump is doing, he's alienating America in the twilight of American empire. The arrogance of the leader is a reflection of the republic. He didn't just fall out of space. He was in an incubation process within the nation, connected to the umbilical cord of the entire republic. And this republic gave birth to him. You understand? So he is a reflection of that which he came from. I'm hoping that you understand what I'm saying. So, again, let's go for it. Let's read this, and then I'm going to play some more clips. Time goes by so fast. That's why I'm advising all of you who listen to the show to please go over to the Patreon/Red Pill Diaries, patreon.com/Red Pill Diaries, and sign up to our platform over there, because we get to talk for an hour, 2 hours, 2.5 hours, 3 hours, you know, and we can cut it up and we can talk about so many things, and we can talk to each other face to face, and you can see us and you can hear us, and then you can also interject whenever you need to, okay? But anyway, let's go back to this article, okay? It says, in response to the U.S. withdrawal on May 17, 2018, the European Commission declared U.S. sanctions against Iran illegal. Did you hear that? So, what we know about the deal is that America signed the deal, along with Germany, France, the UK, China, and Russia. And under the UN auspices, it became binding on America and all of the signatures, including Iran. And the binding agreement was not only a promise, but it was considered an obligation that cannot be broken. Okay? All right? And you hear how Trump talks about the Constitution whenever he feels suited. But according to the Constitution, he is not the supreme policymaker of foreign treaties. The Senate has a say in that. The Senate had no say in America doing what she did. So what I'm saying is their laws are retractable, as Elijah Muhammad says. As long as it suits them, they trumpet it. But when it no longer suits them, they withdraw it. Right? You can never hope for justice from a people that does that. That moves the goalposts every time you turn around. You're playing football. You're on the 1 yard line, and all of a sudden the whistle blows, and the opposing team and the referee tell you, "Well, we know the game was 100 yards from one end to the other end, but now we're going to say because you're on the 1 yard line, the game is now 300 more yards added to the 100 yards, and then every time you make it close, they change the rules. But then when they get the ball, the game is short and it's only a 3 yard game." You can never hope to win playing on his rules, playing in his game, because he's not trustworthy. So they said that it was binding, right? Remember, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said that it was binding on the Savior, right, to come and to deliver us. That is an obligation that cannot be broken. How does he do it? By exposing those who have held us captive, by allowing them rope to hang themselves, by showing the world their shame, their corruption, their hypocrisy, their desire for murder and total domination, greed, lust, right? Sport and play. And for her ever-expanding empire and how they suck the life's blood from other nations. And then the nations and the people that are watching will start feeling it and tasting it and seeing it and smelling it and become more and more dissatisfied with the workings of the system. And when they desire that change, God changes, right? He never changes the condition of a people until the people changes it, right? Right? This is the Quran. This is the truth. So we're looking at a change of world, a change of systems, a change of governance. Even they are telling you that we're seeing changes in the atmosphere, changes in the ozone layer, changes in the climate, changes in space. Why is all of that happening in the 60 to not exceed 70-year grace period? Why is that all happening at the twilight of the American empire? Why is that all happening as America continues her rapid descent into the abyss of nothingness? I'm asking you this. Because if we're not at the culmination of prophecy, then we should not be seeing what we're seeing. Because all signs tell us that if we're seeing what we're seeing, we don't have much prophecy to go for. We're at the end of the line of prophecy. Right? And America must be brought to her knees. I'm telling you this. So, Mr. Adler goes on and says, the commission also instructed the European Union Investment Bank to facilitate European companies' investment in Iran, while both Russia and China have launched long-term initiatives to support the development of bilateral relations with Iran. Now, I'm getting to something, okay? We're talking about the snapback. In light of all of this, there is no question that the U.S. is no longer a party to the JCPOA, and has thus lost any voice in its implementation. The isolated position, isolation, remember the Honorable Elijah Muhammad says that she would be isolated and then she would be burned, right? Right? Listen to what it says. The isolated position of the U.S. was reflected by the lopsided rejection by the U.N. Security Council of the American proposal to reinstate an embargo on Iran after October 2020 when it is scheduled to terminate. Stop right there for a minute. America strong-armed one nation to vote with her. One nation. You had five permanent members of the Security Council. Then you have 10 or 15 non-permanent members, right? And America strong-armed one nation to go along with her. You know what that nation was? The Dominican Republic, by offering undercover bribes along with threats. That's what happened. No other nation would go along, not even her European and NATO allies. Is that not a sign of a terminal decline of an empire? Huh? Listen, let's go further. All of this is leading to war. It says, embarrassed by its utter failure to gain support for its draft resolution, the U.S. hasn't, listen, the U.S. don't learn from failure. It's like she just likes to fail. She thinks that she's going to fail her way to success. Right? Listen, embarrassed by its utter failure to gain support for its draft resolution, the U.S. has countered with a threat to demand a so-called snapback of the JCPOA, which would basically declare that Iran was in violation of the agreement and reimpose U.N. sanctions against it. Stop right there. Well, all relevant international organizations have already confirmed that Iran is fully compliant and is not in breach with any of its obligations in the JCPOA. Why is this important? Because America is running roughshod through law. This is what I'm trying to show you. I'm trying to show you a pattern here. Lies and deceit, extortion, and threats. Okay? That is what rogue nations do. I hope you understand. So, if Iran is not in breach or in violation of the agreement that America breached and violated and terminated, how in the hell can America do a snapback when she's no longer party to the agreement that she's talking about that that Iran violated? You see? Again, the definition of a rogue nation. A state that does not respect other states in its international actions. You understand? So Mr. Etler is not lying when he calls America a rogue state. All right? So let's go further. And then we'll get to a clip because the time is winding down. Man, that time goes by quick. So listen. It says, the U.S. has stated that it can do so because it was still a party to the original JCPOA. Now stop right here. As I said to you, that is just like me claiming getting married to my wife, divorcing my wife, going out partying and enjoying myself and doing everything out under the sun, right? What you call enjoyment or whatever. And then telling my wife, Nicole, you can't go see anybody. You can't have anybody in your house. You can't do this and you can't do that because I'm still your husband, even though by law I divorced you. So I still have all the rights over you, but you don't have none over me. I broke our agreement, and yet I'm still trying to hold you or hold your security binding to the agreement. That is insanity. That is insanity, right? Okay, let's go further. It says, the absurdity of that claim is apparent to all parties to the agreement but the arrogant and cynical U.S. plans to go ahead nonetheless. Listen, some people, when they get in a hole and realize the hole is deep, they stop digging because they realize the more they dig, the harder it's going to be to get out the hole. But when you have been smitten with derision, you don't know which side is up, which side is down, what is right and what is wrong. You're getting a good look at America being smitten with derision. The whole world is looking at America, shaking their head, saying, tis, tis, tis. The whole world is saying, what the hell are they thinking about? Do they actually believe that anybody buys this mess? And then America goes right along, smiling and pointing the finger, and still, well, Iran is in breach, even though all of the organizations which we legitimized say that they are compliant. But since we moved out of the agreement, we're going to hold them to the agreement, even though we're not a party to the agreement. Man, that is absolutely insane, I'm telling you. And unless you look at it like that, you could get caught into the foolishness of empire. Because the scribes of America in the West will write up a line and they'll make you believe that your mom is a terrorist. And then you'll start saying, you know what? When I was 6 years old, I thought I saw my mama building bombs in the kitchen when she told me she was cooking. That's how strong their propaganda apparatus is. All right? But whatever. Let's go a little further. It says, the absurdity of that claim is apparent to all parties to the agreement, meaning that even our European and NATO allies know that America is full of it. Full of it. Full of more of it than a Christmas turkey. Right? And so they're shaking their head. And it's, I'm telling you, listen, they said the absurdity of it. According to the dictionary, the word absurdity is a noun. It means the quality or state of being ridiculous or wildly unreasonable, preposterous, ludicrousness, absurdness. That's what absurdity means. All right? This is what they are saying. But let's go further. It says, it is incumbent upon the UN Security Council and the entire international community to reject the cynical ploy of the U.S. and declare any such attempt null and void. Both Russia and China, as signatories to the JCPOA, have roundly denounced the U.S. perfidy and called for an international conference to resolve the matter and reduce tension in the region, a call which the U.S. has rejected. Why? Because the U.S. wants tension in the region. Because she has always eyed Iran. Always. She never forgot the revolution. She never, just like she never forgot Gaddafi when he ousted American bases from Libya. She has a long memory. She tells you, oh, let's all get along. Let's forget. But she never holds herself to that standard. If you did something in the first grade and you go before a court magistrate or just a judge, they're going to bring up everything on file. And they don't care about the person that you've become. They're going to hold you accountable to the person who they thought you were. And then they're going to hold you to the status of their laws. Right? They don't forget. You better learn that too. Okay? It says, it is clear that the U.S. has dug a hole from which it cannot climb out. What? It's amazing. I was just talking about that. It is clear that the U.S. has dug a hole from which it cannot climb out. The international community of nations must rally around Iran and refuse to go along in any fashion with unilateral or an illegal sanctions imposed by the U.S. Mechanisms to punish the U.S. for its unilateral intransigence must also be devised. What kind of mechanisms? Ousting the dollar. See, now we're at what I was talking about. Right? Stopping trade in U.S. dollars. Start excluding America from institutions that were built outside of Western domination, like the AAIB, which is already doing it, and the BRICS Bank, right? And the Belt and Road Initiative, introduced by China. All of these are things in the CHIPS, the Chinese International Payment System, which is outside of the grasp of SWIFT and the other U.S. mechanisms. All of these institutions and mechanisms are to challenge American supremacy and white hegemony globally. It's moving from west to east. Right? I hope you hear me. It says, mechanisms to punish the U.S. for its unilateral intransigence must also be devised. If not, the U.S. will continue to act with impunity as a rogue nation. This is it. So what you see going on? Nations lining up to work with China, to work with Russia, to work outside of the bag of American dominance. Listen, let's go to a quick clip, a four-minute clip, then we'll come back with another clip because the time is running down so fast. So listen to this.
That's not the only place in the world, by the way, that's seeing some conflict. Here's the latest now on that historic explosion in Lebanon. 178 dead, more than 300,000 people still homeless. And then there's this, a president who refuses to step down and is not ready to rule out that the cause of the blast was a missile attack. Here to join us now with what this means for this small nation is former Pentagon official Michael Maloof, who's a real expert in this particular region of the world. What do you make of the latest coming out of Lebanon right now, Michael?
Well, I think it's confusion. I think what you're seeing is a race by the West to try and offset any effort by Lebanon to look eastward. I think that this is a very important thing, particularly for the financing and the need for reform. The problem is that all the conditions that the West, particularly France and the United States, are imposing on Lebanon for IMF, International Monetary Fund monies to bail out, requires significant reforms, which are just non-starters, and those are preconditions. And if that's the case, and they cannot accomplish them, then Lebanon is probably going to have no choice but to look eastward. And they're talking that way. We hear this from Nasrallah, who's the Secretary General of Hezbollah, and we're hearing it more and more. I'm hearing it more and more on the streets in Lebanon.
When you say eastward, do you mean China, Russia, Saudi Arabia? How far east?
I would say it'll be an alliance between China and Iran.
Huh.
And so there's this possibility. China already is very much wanting to help rebuild that port. They have that capability, and apparently there are discussions on the way to do that. I mean, we, the United States, are our own worst enemy. We've imposed ludicrous sanctions on them at a very critical time, particularly when the country itself and the people are suffering, and yet we're imposing even more sanctions. People are not going to be receptive to that kind of treatment from the West. So
I'm just wondering, I'm thinking, are we putting the sanctions on, or are we putting the sanctions on as a proxy for Bibi Netanyahu, for example, and Israel?
Well, it's probably both of them. I mean, this helps Netanyahu because the target ultimately is Hezbollah, because Hezbollah is well ingrained in the country, in its leadership, in its politics, and this is something that I think Netanyahu, more than anything, needs right now is a victory to upset Hezbollah and to ensure that it does not go either eastward or things remain the same. I think what could ultimately happen if there's chaos that continues is that I would not rule out, and this is just Mike Maloof talking, that Syria marches troops back in again. because we're hearing that France is considering putting in some troops into try to maintain order at this point, and it's getting worse and worse.
Michael Malouf, great insight in this situation.
Thank you.
So if you really want to hear what took place over in Lebanon, if you really want to know what took place over there, go to the – I'm serious. I'm not just saying this just to be saying this. Go over to Patreon/Red Pill Diaries. Brother Rashid and I talked in depth on this about what took place over in Lebanon and what's taking place in the Middle East. And we're going to have a live show, I think, either tomorrow or Saturday. So you want to check that out via Patreon.com/TheRedPillDiaries, The Red Pill Diaries, not Red Pill Diaries, The Red Pill Diaries, okay? Now, I see Brother Gerald's hands up. Brother, I'm going to get you shortly. Keep them up, brother, keep them up. I want to go to this next clip because I know the time is short, and then I'll bring you in. This follows along what we were just talking about. Hold your thought, my good brother. Hold your thought. I hope the devil didn't knock him off the air. There you are, because I see some phone lines been dropped. I know how they do on the show. But listen, you see what's going on. Even Lebanon is looking east, and now France is trying to trample the little, pretending like they have the best at heart for the people of Lebanon, when France was a colonial power, which Lebanon was part of Syria, and they partitioned that area over there. But that's another story for you, but let's go to this clip here, because this is in full line with what we've been talking about China, about America, about the dollar, about what's going on. Pay close attention to this, okay? This is about 8 minutes, and I might stop it in between it, but I want to put this out because I didn't get a chance to put enough clips out for you like I said I was going to do, and we'll come back and toss it up with this, okay?
Way. That's going to be a big part of our coverage here, but we here on this newscast have reported on and also kept you apprised of all the unprecedented moves by the U.S. Federal Reserve during the economic crisis that was caused by the COVID pandemic, frankly, even before that, right? So we reported on how the Fed was mysteriously lowering interest rates while we, the American people, were being told that the economy was strong and there was no need for any artificial stimulation. The stimulation occurred anyway. We reported when the Fed began pouring tens of billions of dollars into the U.S. banks on a daily basis under something called repos. Again, it happened when the economy was strong and there was no apparent need for an artificial infusion. The infusions happened anyway. That was before the pandemic. Now I want to give you a new number. Are you ready? $3.5 trillion. You see, since the economic collapse, there has been pretty much Katie by the door at the Fed. Interest rates went to zero, and by the end of this year, it's projected that the Fed will have created $3.5 trillion in government securities. That is new money, printed, as many often say, completely out of thin air with nothing to really back it up. But wait, there's more. Now we're learning that the Fed is printing money not just at the behest of the American economy, but now also at the behest of economies all over the world. This is new. The Fed has always resisted becoming the world's lender, but now it appears that's exactly what it is doing. They say it's a response to the COVID-19 pandemic, and the loans are only being made in the form of swap lines to countries that we're friendly with. For example, countries like Russia, Iran, China, Venezuela, Cuba, they get nothing. South Korea, Mexico, Singapore, Brazil, they're getting funds. Why is this happening? Well, did anybody, by the way, check with you as a U.S. citizen? It's your money, really, that they're printing or creating or whatever it's called. Did Congress even know that this is happening? Does the president know? Did he approve of this? And what's the real reason for it? We're going to drill down on this right here on the news with Rick Sanchez, where we believe this is the type of story you need to know about because it's time to do news again. And here is our list of the questions we think you'll be asking tomorrow after watching this newscast today. The Fed is becoming the world's lender of choice. Did you even know that? What caused a massive blast in Beirut that has damaged an entire swath of the city? And who really provided the information for the infamous Steele dossier? We now know. All right, let's start with this. Just how much money can the Fed print? How much? First, it was the mystery drop in interest rates. Then it was the tens of billions every single day in repo money to the banks. Then came what? The national economic crisis. And now the world is the Fed's recipient of created money. The world. Where's this leading? Joining us now to discuss this is Daniel McAdams. Daniel is the executive director of the Ron Paul Institute, which is a longtime critic of the Fed. Mr. McAdams, so we've had these conversations before. It seems almost remarkable that we've come to this now. First, it was, I think you heard the figure I gave, $3.5 trillion, that after lowering interest rates. And now, essentially, the bank to the world, the Fed is. Our bank, our Fed. What do you make of this?
Well, you captured it very well in the introduction, Rick. You know, unfortunately, like many COVID patients who succumb to multiple comorbidities, the U.S. economy before coronavirus hit also had several comorbidities that it was suffering from. Endless bubbles. We saw in 08 that bubble was coming to fruition again, and we saw at the end of last year, as you pointed out, the carry trade with other banks. So the economy was already very, very ill. The COVID virus hit, and like a lot of patients, it's really threatening to kill the economy entirely. The Fed has a magic button, however, which is printing money out of thin air. And thus far, as you point out, it's done it to the tune of about $3 million here domestically. And how many billions, hundreds of billions overseas that it's lending? It's ironically, it's actually seeing the death knell of the U.S. economy as some sort of an energy drink for the Fed to enable it to expand all over the entire universe. It really doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Now, it's funny. You did something I do all the time. You said 3 million. I know you meant 3 trillion. I get it. And I think most people
trillion,
do too.
Million, it's, you know.
It gets to the point where the numbers don't even matter anymore, but we do. And look, I'm not an expert on this. I'm not an economist. But I do wonder how much is too much. Where does it end? 3.5 trillion here, another trillion there now to all these countries all over the planet. Where does it end, Daniel?
Well, where it ends is de-dollarization, and, you know, the so-called experts refuse to entertain the possibility of de-dollarization, where the evidence is all around. I'm not an expert either, Rick, but it doesn't take a weatherman to see which way the wind blows. You know, we see Russia and China in June. They signed a deal that they would do joint trade, not in dollars, but in their mutual currencies. We saw, I think, a 40% decline from March until May in the use of U.S. dollars for trade overseas. The world is de-dollarizing, just as the Fed is sort of obliviously wandering around throwing money around. This is happening. It's because the Fed is not the lender of last resort. The Fed, especially with Corona here, has become the lender, full stop. And then it's extraordinarily dangerous. And I'm glad you pointed out, you frame it in terms of the American people, because we're going to be left holding the bag when this whole thing goes down in flames.
Now, let's try to understand this. So we've decided, or somebody has decided for us, that we're going to print money, our money, belongs to you, me, and everybody else who's watching this newscast who's a citizen of the United States, and we're going to give it to other countries, hoping that money can help them recover. I guess I'm wondering, to what end? How does that help me as an American? Does it?
I think it's hoping to keep the Fed relevant and to keep the elites relevant. And you point out perfectly the politicization of the Fed's activity overseas. Of course, there are no loans, not only to Iran and to Venezuela, but even countries like Turkey, for whatever faults it may have. It's a NATO ally. The Fed is a highly politicized. It uses its ability to lend money overseas like the State Department used to use its ability to give foreign aid overseas. But where the State Department throws a few thousand, a few million overseas, as you point out, the Fed can add a T to it and give trillions overseas, and that gives it extraordinary foreign policy power, and that's what it's wielding right now.
It seems troubling, so let me ask you the next question, the obvious one that I think a lot of people who are watching us talk right now are thinking at home. Did I give my say on this? Did Congress approve this? Did the president approve this? Did the Senate approve this? Or do these guys make these decisions at the Fed nilly-willy because they can?
Well, did we give our consent to anything that's been happening over the past few months? You know, from the mayors to the governors, the petty tyrants have all come up and ruled by decree, and our global financial elites, the Federal Reserve being the key among them, has also risen out of nowhere to control and command us. You know, we're at sort of the de-democratization age where our voices literally don't mean anything. It doesn't matter who you elect. The elites remain in power. They'll do as they see fit with your lives, with your safety, with your health, and with your dollars that they'll take at will. And what they do, which is most cruel, Rick, as you know very well, is the inflation that's coming is the cruelest tax because it hits working class Americans the most. It hits them the hardest. It hits them. We're having a wave of evictions in the U.S. now. The dollar, you send a few trillion out to Americans, they get $1,000. They think that things are going well. They're going to be paying $30,000 or $40,000 for that $1,000 they get in inflation and in other ways. So it really is a disaster. Nobody asked us. Things are coming to a head.
It's a fascinating story. I mean, it really is. In the end, what the Fed does, which, by the way, they may have a perfectly good explanation for it, and it may be something that works for what their interests are. But I got to tell you, it seems like it's not a part of representative democracy, at least not the type that most of us as Americans signed up for.
Now, you see, even he said, that doesn't sound like representative democracy. The nation that always trumps democracy, the nation that always trumpets human rights and freedom of the press, and how she's shutting down international press services that don't agree with her narrative. The nation that always talks about freedom and human rights and stuff. Makes up only 5% of the global population, but over a quarter of the total prison population, with 80 to 90% of the prison population being her ex-slaves. What about human rights? She strikes out in every category. This is why she's fallen. Brother Jerry, I haven't forgotten you. I'm going to let you get your time to talk. I'm going to let you say what you have to say, my brother. But I want to get on this real quick. So as they were talking about de-dollarization, I just put it in the Google engine while they were talking about it. And this is what came up from China. China confident de-dollarization is fast underway amid tense times. A global trend towards de-dollarization has already begun. The last piece of load-bearing wall of the U.S. Empire State Building has cracked, in other words. See, they're using the same analogies that they hear on the Star and Crescent Report. We tell you about this load-bearing wall of the empire. You've heard us say it multiple times, right? They're talking about the nations are now retreating from the dollar. And it goes further and says, global policies for de-dollarization include sharply reducing U.S. debt holdings, dropping U.S. dollar status as an anchor currency, increasing non-dollar bulk commodity trade, growing the reserve of non-dollar currencies, and ramping up God's hedge against the dollar. You know what they're talking about? Gold. They say God or they say gold because gold has been considered money since the time of God, they say. Okay? So, we're looking at this going on right now. This gives you an idea of why America is so desperately trying to wage war. Why she wants to be in Central Asia, Afghanistan, and Pakistan, and why she wants to be in Iran, Central Asia states. Because Brzezinski said, Eurasia, right, holds the key to power. Now, Africa holds the key to the world's success. But if America and the West want to maintain their sway and keep their economies afloat, they have to dominate the Eurasian landscape and hold the entire world hostage over the trade routes, over the carbohydrate findings and resources. This is what they're trying to do. This is what you see in action. Global war on the horizon. And at every turn, you're watching the empire strike out. Let me bring you, because it's like 5 or 6 minutes. I got to bring this brother in. Brother Jerry, I got to send to you, my good brother, with love. Assalamu alaikum.
Willie Salam, and we love back to you, brother.
Go ahead, brother.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, brother. America still thinks that she's the exceptional nation that once sat on the hill, huh, brother? That everybody has to capitulate.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. They have to capitulate to her demands. But she is fastly becoming what the most honorable Elijah Muhammad stated she would become, the laughing stock of the world. Now everyone is laughing and mocking America, you know, with these hypocritical, you know, policies. Speaking to the subject of what you're speaking on about the snapback sanctions, how in the world can America impose snapback sanctions, brother, when America is no longer a member of the JCPOA, which is Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, as a member? They're not even a member of it anymore.
When you're insane, anything is rational.
Yes, sir, that's right. The article you were speaking to earlier for your listeners, there's an exceptional article in addition to what you read from Stephen Lindman. It's called Trump Regime Unilaterally and Illegally Imposing Snapback Sanctions on Iran. It said unanimously adopted Security Council Resolution 2231 that affirmed the JCPOA nuclear deal eliminated U.N. sanctions on Iran. Its provisions and the P5+1 approved nuclear agreement are binding international U.S. constitutional law under the Supremacy Clause, Article 6, Clause 2. DJT unlawfully withdrew from the JCPOA in May 2018, giving his regime no legal say over its implementation or whatever relates to it. Days earlier, he vowed to unilaterally impose snapback sanctions on Iran. The JCPOA provisions let any of its signatory reimpose veto-proof sanctions on Iran that became null and void when the agreement took effect in January 2016. Only JCPOA signatories, Russia, China, Britain, France, and Germany, may legally invoke snapback now, not the U.S. illegally abandoning the binding agreement. Remaining signatories unanimously oppose snapback because it would undo years of diplomatic efforts that went into establishing the JCPOA they want preserved. Time and again, the U.S. does what it pleases, operating extrajudicially and forcing its will on other nations by pressure, bribes, bullying, threats, and brute force when other actions fail. On Wednesday, Trump said he directed Pompeo to notify the United Nations Security Council that his regime intends to restore virtually all of United Nations sanctions on Iran. Extrajudicially, he failed to add. At his unilateral discretion in defiance of the rule of law, the Security Council ruling and unanimous will of remaining JCPOA signatories, Trump unlawfully claimed the right to prevent Iran from developing a nuclear weapon it doesn't seek, never did, and urges their elimination regionally and worldwide. On Wednesday, Pompeo said the following. On Thursday, he'll meet with the Security Council President and Secretary General to provide notification of the snapback, and then 30 days from now, all the sanctions that were in place will resume. So they're forcing their way on the Security Council, in other words. Then he says, he goes on, he threatened Russia, China, and other nations, saying the Trump regime will hold them accountable if reject its will on Iran. He falsely claimed that European people are not safe because the Security Council overwhelmingly rejected the Trump regime's resolution to extend expiring arms embargo on Iran indefinitely. On Monday, Iranian Foreign Minister Zarif tweeted the following in response to Trump's vow to invoke snapback. U.S. recourse to dispute resolution mechanism in SC Resolution 2231 has no leg to stand on. On Wednesday, Iranian President Rouhani slammed Trump regime threats, saying America is no longer a member of the JCPOA to use snapback, and all its other signatories condemned the U.S. effort, adding, the world knows what will happen if the Trump regime takes this dead-end path. They burned the bridge and imagined that it's still there for them to cross. If anyone in Iran thinks that this tyrannical regime in the White House and the oppressive sanctions are permanent, they are wrong, because neither the White House tyrant nor the sanctions are there to stay forever. Sanctions will break and disappear, though resistance. We made them understand that they have made a mistake, and the White House has fully understood they have made a mistake. But they are helpless on the path they have taken, and it has become difficult for them to find a way out. Will remaining JCPOA signatories, Russia, China, Britain, France, and Germany, break with the Trump regime's unlawful invoking and snapback by fully supporting the agreement and Security Council Resolution 2231, affirming it to prevent the deal –